the 9th of April. Aren't you excited about springtime?
Yeah.
No, I am. No, you don't like spring? I like spring. I like spring. All right, so we're going to get started on chapter 9, bonds. We're about a week behind, actually. My apologies. But more interested in making sure you understand what's going on. Oh, I wanted to give you that, too. Just simply getting through all the... We'll get through most of the important stuff. Because really, after we finish bonds, we've done the most important things, along with looking at diversification. So, chapter 7 is due Thursday, and it turns out that this is due, I think, next week, the assignment. If you look at the assignment, chapter 9, is that next week? Yeah. So, this is pretty easy. This is pretty easy. It's just looking things up on the internet, and you know how to do that already. So, we're going to get started on bonds. Lord, but first we need a good joke. Who's got a good joke? Anybody got a good joke? No? Did I tell you about the guy with the little red sports car?
No.
No, I didn't tell you about the guy with the little red sports car. This guy just got this little hot red sports car, and he's so proud of himself. And he's out on the freeway thinking, hey, I'll see what it can do. So he goes up to 85. Yeah, it's a convertible, of course. Wind blowing through his hair. What's left of it. What? What? Whatever. It's a little hot, little red sports car. He thinks it's hot. And then he's doing 85. And he sees in the rear view mirror a little red light going, oh, damn, I just got this thing and the insurance is already too expensive as it is. So he figures, I'm going to run the car. He stomps on it. Not a good idea, right? The thing goes up to 105. The cop car comes right up behind him. Now he's got the siren blasting, and he's screaming over the intercom. Pull over! I told the other class, didn't I? Okay, did I tell you guys? I didn't think I'd tell you this. No. So the guy goes, oh, I better rely, you know, I better be contrite. You know, I'll be sorry. The cop is furious. He says, buddy, you better have a good reason for why you tried to run me, or you're going to jail. And the guy goes, well, officer, last week my wife ran away with a cop. And the cop looks at him and says, so? I thought you were trying to bring her back. He was just afraid to bring his wife. No, of course not. The guy had a wife like that too. In the cop, he said, you understand that, right? What? No, that's it. That's the cop. The cop gave him off because he has a wife like that too. Right? He was hoping that somebody would run off with her. Anyway, so let's get started on bonds. You guys haven't been married long enough, some of you. Gentlemen prefer bonds. That's by Andrew Carnegie, the Carnegie Hall, Carnegie Mellon Institute and University. He was an industrialist of the late 19th, early 20th century, and he said this before the movie Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And is it true that gentlemen prefer bonds? No, bonds. Blondes is, that's a movie. That was basically, Gentlemen Prefer Bonds was basically an advertisement for the diamond industry. Before that, diamonds weren't really that popular with the general public. But, oh yeah, it was interesting. That's what it was for. And so, yes, we find that bonds are far less exciting than stocks, but they are more reliable. What are bonds? They're negotiable, publicly traded, long-term debt securities, whereby the issuer agrees to pay a fixed amount of interest over a specified period of time and to repay a fixed amount of principal at maturity. So the issuer, the corporation, corporate bonds, the municipality, the state or local government, the city of Chula Vista, the Southwestern Community College, the state of California, or the federal government, treasury bonds, they are in need of money. And so they don't go to a bank. They don't go to a credit union. They go to the investment community and say, hey, we're Walmart, or we're the state of California. We need cash. Will you lend it to us? And what we'll do is we'll agree to pay you interest, and at the end of the term, we'll pay you the principal. So it's a loan. That's basically what it is. When you are investing in bonds, you are a loaner, L-O-A-N-E-R, not L-O-N-E-R, as opposed to an owner when you invest in stocks, which are also called equities. the trust indenture. The trust indenture you could think of as the mortgage document. Anybody buy a house recently or ever before? Wait till you buy a home. Wait till you buy and you pay and you go through 80 pages of this mortgage application. Well, the trust indenture is like that. It's the contract that sets forth the terms between the issuer and the bondholders. It describes the rights and the obligations. They appoint a trustee, somebody who oversees what's going on with the bonds. And it's usually a bank or a trust company. These are companies called trust companies that do this job. Stipulates the protective covenant, the obligation of the bond issuer to keep doing business, keep equipment in working order, make payments on time, and such and such. Have you heard of the Proposition R bonds? Or Proposition AA bonds? Well, as you walk around the campus, you might see Proposition R at work. If you bother to look. Anybody not seen the spreadsheet yet? If you on the corner, right on the corner of campus, about 8th Street and Otay Lakes, by that sign that doesn't seem to be working anymore, that we Pepsi call Pepsi transfer. You'll see a big sign. Proposition R at work. What are we doing? We needed money to fix up the campus. They wanted to build out that corner lot because the developers are. Water or mouth watering. They want that corner lot. So they keep asking the college, let us build. And about 7-8 years ago, the college almost made a deal with the developer to turn that into a strip mall. And then at the very last moment, it would have been really ugly. Not from the front, but from the back, from inside the campus, you would have been looking at the back of a strip mall, which, can you imagine what that, if you've ever been behind a strip mall, you know, it's trash cans and floors and stuff to put the goods and services that go in through the back. So we said, oh no, we're going to build it out, we need the cash. Well, we can't have a bake sale for that. So we went to the voters of the South Bay and said, hey, would you allow us to sell these bonds? Who else needs this? Anybody else needs a spreadsheet? Okay. Would you allow us to sell these bonds so that we can build out the corner lot, plus a few other things? They're building rebuilding the stadium. I don't know why the old one was fine as far as I'm concerned. But. And the voters said yes. So Southwestern College has sold these bonds. We've got a ton of money, millions of dollars, and we're going to have to pay those back over the next 30 years. Well, are we going to pay those back?
Yes.
No. You are. The property owners of the South Bay had a certain amount of money tacked on to their property taxes. That was part of the deal. That the voters said, yes, it's okay for us to raise the property taxes to pay for these bonds over the next 30 years. Now, do you think the voters really understood what they were signing when they voted that? And every year this happens. You see on the ballot, oh, we want to build new parks. We want to have a bullet train. We want to have more emergency equipment. Will you vote for this? And the voters go, okay. What they don't realize, I think some of them understand, certainly I do, and now you do, but they don't understand that they're setting up a situation where they have to pay this thing over the next 20, 30 years. With me? It comes from our taxes. It doesn't come free. Okay. So, and then, I don't know if you follow the news, but did you notice that many people from Southwestern College were indicted?
Yep.
Did you notice that? Not any professors, I want to say, but some of the folks over in the administration. It's a great place to work, folks. Don't get me wrong. I love teaching, but they need your card. They need your card. No, none of them did. None of them were put in. There was no bond set. They were all released on their own recognizance. And this is so stupid, folks. I mean, if you're going to accept a bribe, you're a public official, you're going to accept a bribe, I want at least $5 million. Right, probably 50. $50 million in a Swiss bank account, Cayman Islands, no questions asked, fine, I'll run away. These guys, what? In your sister's account. No, I don't want in my brother's account, in my account, but in somewhere outside the United States. Yeah, exactly. These people were taking bribes of Chargers tickets. And can you believe it? And they were taken to a steakhouse, $1,200. Taken up to Napa Valley, $1,800. Like, no, don't do that for that sniggly little mouth. Now they're all looking at having records. I don't think anybody's going to do jail time, but they're going to have a. Some of them are going to have.
Why waste the taxpayers' money to go to the trial?
That's a good question, and some people are asking that question. Why are we wasting so much money putting them through a trial? And that's a good question. I guess because you're just trying to say, don't do this, don't do it, don't get away with it. What? The companies that were getting the award to build out the corner lot. And so, dumb. What? Oh, they got indicted too. They got indicted. The one guy was, he was brand new. He had just started working there. He's going, I just thought this is the way things were done. I'm sorry. I just thought that's the way you do. What? Oh, he did. In fact, that's the reason that all the rest of them are in trouble. Because this guy said, you mean I can't do that? No, you can't against the law. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I goofed. And he's not going to do it. He's probably going to plead guilty to some little misdemeanor and stuff. It is fun. It's sad. It's so funny, but it's also sad. This is taxpayer dollars. That's the worst thing. Why should you invest in bonds? Huh? Why do you want to invest in bonds? Well, I wouldn't use the word a lot, but they're far less volatile. You're going to receive interest. With stocks, we receive optionally dividends. Are interest payments from bonds optional? No, they are mandatory. And if the bond issuer doesn't pay the interest, they are in default. And they're going to go before a bankruptcy judge and say, okay, you're in trouble. And in almost all cases, bond issuers repay the principal. The principal is returned when the bond is redeemed. So these are the two main reasons we buy bonds. So we call bonds fixed income or fixed investments because we know how much interest we're going to get, and then 99.7% whatever we get our interest, and in principle we're going to get it back, and 99.9% of the time we're going to get our money back. So I like to think of it, and I don't know if this makes any sense, again it's a sports analogy, bonds are like football or soccer because you play the game on a rectangle. And that's it. It's inside the box. Whereas stocks are kind of like baseball or cricket, where the field is goes on forever. Right? There's no limit. You like that? You like that analogy? I don't know. If it works, if it doesn't work, I don't know. But the idea is, it holds forth, is that stocks really are unlimited. I mean, obviously, there's a 8, 9, 10% limit. Some do better. But when you buy a bond, you know how much you're going to get. Now, the third little wrinkle in this is the potential for capital gains and capital losses. Huh? I mean, we can actually gain money from buying bonds or lose money from buying bonds? Yes. If interest rates fall, there's a potential for a capital gain, but there's also a potential for a capital loss if interest rates rise. And we're going to go over this over and over and over again because it is such an important part of bond investing, and people just get tripped up over it. They get really confused about it. But, as we'll say again and over again, if you intend to hold the bonds until they are redeemed, until you get your principal back, you don't care. You don't care what happens to the interest rates. Some bonds offer tax advantages, and some bonds are convertibles, which are really sexy looking, aren't they? Doesn't it sound sexy, convertible bonds? No, they're not. They're like a convertible car. It looks sexy. It's exciting while you're driving with the wind blowing through your hair, but then when it starts raining and you try to get the hood up, it won't go up, or somebody puts their fist through the rag and now it's $3,000 to fix. Yeah, no. Bondholders are first in line for repayment if there's default on the loans. Well, that's not actually true. Got to pay the tax man, but usually if there's default, there's no taxes to be paid, and you got to pay the payroll expenses. Who's at the back of the line? Stocks. Stock investors. And that is why when you hear a company go into bankruptcy, the bondholders get first dibs. And by the time the bondholders have gotten whatever's left, they've already picked the carcass clean of the corporation, and the stockholders get nothing. That is why you'll see the stocks of a company going to bankruptcy, the stock will go down to 18 cents or whatever. It's worthless. Bond prices are far less volatile than stocks, so we love bonds for that reason, because they add ballast. Any sailors in here? Any sailors? What's ballast? Yeah, you put at the bottom of the keel, at the bottom of the boat, you put all this cargo and everything that weighs a lot in the bottom so that the boat doesn't rock a whole lot. And that's what bonds do for a portfolio. The bonds will keep the portfolio from going way up, way down. And but bond prices still fluctuate, and we'll see that in a bit. Average return over decades has been less than stocks. That makes sense. 4, 5, 6% for munis and treasury bonds, 6, 7, 8 for corporate bonds. But right now, bond prices are much lower than their historical payments. Historical returns. Some are paying more, but very, very few. Even what are called high yield or junk bonds or non-investment grade, they're even paying less than 8% on average. Some are paying more. So here it is, folks. And I want you to remember this this analogy, because it's actually a pretty good one. It's actually a very good analogy. It's the analogy of the seesaw, the sube y baja. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Sube y baja. As interest rates go down, would you pass it over to Nicholas? Pass it over that way. As interest rates fall, bond prices go up. If interest rates rise, bond prices will go down. It's an inverse relationship. And it drives people nuts. But if you think of the seesaw, it's a perfect analogy. Where are interest rates now? There, remember chapter 1? Did you do the assignment for chapter 1? No, by the way, folks, you can always turn in your assignments late. I'm very happy. I mean, I won't give you a whole lot of them, especially for chapter 1. But you can always turn in your assignments late, because in my humble opinion, other professors think I'm a jerk for doing this. You're not helping those. You're not teaching them any responsibility. I said, I'll let somebody else do that. No, I understand why they're saying it, but I want you to experience. I want you to do the experience. That's more important to me. Anyway, you saw that savings accounts and CDs and money markets and treasury bills are paying almost nothing. In some cases, basically nothing, 0.01%, why even bother? And bonds are paying very little, too, as we'll see when we take a look at some quotes. So where are bond prices if interest rates are way down? Bond prices are pretty darn high. And since the turmoil of 2008, people have been, it's slowed down a bit, but for the first few years after that, people were just throwing money into bonds. Why? Because they were scared from the stock market. The stock market falls for 50-60% for some stocks, a whole lot more. Over the long term, stocks have outperformed bonds. Right? If we look at 20-year periods, they've always been beaten. Bonds have always been beaten by stocks. Stocks have always outperformed bonds. So why would you invest in bonds? Huh? Why would you do it? Shorter term, if you have a shorter term or a time horizon, that's important. And less risky. Stocks are far more volatile. Bonds offer an element of stability. That term we use, ballast. So for some investors, stocks are simply too risky. They reason, if I can obtain my long-term goals without taking on the risk of being invested in stocks, so be it. It's called the I can sleep better at night factor. Right? Because I'll tell you, folks, when the market goes down, it's a terrible feeling. You really feel as if you've been punched in the gut. When your $10,000 becomes $6,000, your $100,000 becomes $55,000, your $1 million becomes $600,000, what would you do? Yeah, I'm going to run the bonds. And yeah, that's what people experienced just 5 years ago. That's the kind of downturn they experienced, depending on how much they had invested. And bonds also make good intermediate, as Derek said. They are good for 3 to 4 or 5 years, where stocks are good for 7, 10 years. And sometimes bonds are just screaming good deals. Are they now?
No,
they are not good deals right now. What are some of the risks? Well, as we said, interest rates go down, bond prices go up. But when interest rates go up, I'm using interest rates over here, I should say, interest rates go down, bond prices go up. If interest rates go up, bond prices are going to go down. So bond prices will rise when interest rates fall, and they will fall when interest rates rise. If you intend to sell the bonds in the future before they mature, before you get your money back, you could experience a capital loss. Purchasing power. If the interest you receive on the bond is not enough to keep up with inflation, you're actually losing money. And that's what's happening now, in my humble opinion, to these bozos. I mean, these investors who are buying the 10-year treasury bond, which is paying 1.7% over 10 years. You give them your money now. You can give them on treasurydirect.gov. You can go there with your link your bank account and buy a $1,000 10-year treasury bond paying 1.7%. And that means for the next 10 years, you get 1.7%. You get your $1,000 back at the end of 10 years. But what is inflation running at? 2. So what's happening to your money?
Nothing.
You're losing money. It looks like it's going up. Yes, because you're receiving the $17 a year, 1.7%. And you get your $1,000 back in 10 years, but you're actually losing. That's called purchasing power risk. Make sense? And then there is always the possibility, doesn't matter who it is, that the issuer, the entity, the business, the municipality, the federal government will default. Now, does it happen often? No. Does it happen with the federal government? You will hear people jump You will hear people jump up and down, especially on Skunk News, saying that the government's going to default. Do you believe them?
Not yet.
Not yet? No. The government, the United States government is not going to default, folks. I don't care what anybody says. If it does, the rest of the world, I mean, the whole thing is falling down. If that is the case, who cares? Have you ever had moth soup? I hear it's pretty good.
Moth
soup, yeah. Got the protein. I had chapulines down in Oaxaca. You know what they are? The little crickets, the little grasshoppers, little crickets. Very good, actually. I was impressed. Pretty tasty. The bigger ones are a little mealy. I didn't like the bigger ones, but the tiny ones, really tasty. And so this is much less a risk with municipalities and treasuries, although some municipalities have gone belly up. Right now there's a whole brouhaha. Have you heard of Stockton? Stockton up near Sacramento? They made some really stupid decisions, and now the city of Stockton, a city of some 300,000 people, has been hauled into bankruptcy court, and we're going to see what happens to the bondholders. And it's a political maneuver. They're trying to get rid of their pension obligations to their workers. And then liquidity risk. We talked about liquidity in the past. This is a risk that there may not be sufficient buyers when and if an investor wants to sell their bonds. It's less of a problem with treasuries and muni bonds. There's usually somebody out there who will take your bonds. It can be a problem with thinly traded bonds for corporations or municipalities that are very small, but it's usually not too big of a problem. And then we will discuss prepayment risk, the call risk, the risk that the bond will be called away from the investor before its scheduled maturity date. This is the same idea, and we're going to talk about this in detail. If you are a homeowner, and you're still paying 6, 7% on your loan, what should you do right now, today? You should run down to your credit union, your bank, your mortgage broker, and see if you can refinance. Because right now, 30-year loans are at 3.5%. So you're paying 6, 7% to this bank or this credit union or this mortgage company, and they're licking their chops. Because they're getting money for free, basically, and you're paying them 6-7%. So you would run right down and see if you can refinance. Now, if your house is underwater, as it's called, the house is worth less than the mortgage, they're going to say, go away, we aren't interested in you. But the same thing happens with bonds. If you're getting 7-8% right now on your bonds, the company, the municipality, well, the federal government never does that. They never refinance. But if it's a company, they're going to say, we don't want to pay 7%. We can go out and pay 4 or 5%. They're going to call in the bonds. They're going to say, we'll pay you off. We'll pay off your mortgage. We'll pay off your loan. And we'll refinance at a lower interest rate.
That happened.
Oh yeah, sure. If they're smart, right? Unless they issue what are called non-callable bonds, which means they can't do it. The Treasury has always issued non-callable bonds, meaning that they can't call them. They're stuck. They have to pay that forever. And those are actually, right now, non-callable bonds are like gold. You know, people love that because so many other companies are saying, ooh, we don't want to pay 7, 8%. We want to call these puppies in. As we'll see, yes.
So if interest rates are low, bond prices are high right now, that means to get them, they're high?
If you want to buy them, they're high.
You have to pay a lot of money.
You have to pay more than $1,000.
When that starts to change and it comes down, then I'm expecting some sort of like 5 or 10 year cycle before...
Unless you want to sell your bond at a discount. We're going to see that. Hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. Let's see it. Okay, where are we going? Come on. Oh, what happened? Okay. All right, now the coupon rate. Here's a term you really need to learn. It's also called nominal rate, but you'll hear more people use the old term coupon rate, and it's an anachronism. It's a technology has made this obsolete, but people still use the term coupon. And coupon rate is the rate that defines the amount of annual interest. 6% nominal rate, or 5%, or 8%. It will always pay that amount of money. That's the named rate. The interest is usually paid every 6 months. That's true of most all bonds in the United States. Although there are some bonds that pay every month, some pay quarterly, some pay once a year. How often do corporations pay dividends?
Quarterly.
Everyone should say quarterly. We ask you, this is one of the things you need to burn in the back of your eyelids. How often do corporations pay dividends?
Quarterly.
In the United States and most of the countries that were associated with the UK, it's quarterly. What? Right. In the dividends in the U.S., U.K., Canada, Hong Kong, Australia, New Zealand, they pay quarterly. Outside the United States, Europe, every 6 months, annually. When do bond issuers pay their interest? Every 6 months.
Usually.
There's a few outliers. Now, where did the term coupon come from? This is a bit of trivia. What? Yeah. Bonds used to be sold as documents. They were called bearer bonds. And in the back of the bond, there'd be all these coupons. And every 6 months, when it was time for the interest to be paid, you'd clip the coupon, put it in an envelope, send it to the company, and they would turn around and send you a check. Now, does that happen anymore?
No.
But still, the term, to this day, earning interest from a bond is often called clipping the coupon, even though it's all gone electronic. I mean, there may be a few out there. I doubt it. I doubt there's any left anymore. Now, the principle. The principle is the face value. So these terms mean the same thing. Principle, face value, par value. They all mean the same thing. Like my little bullets. I don't know why I did that today. But they're almost always 10,000. I mean, 1,000. I'm sorry. My mistake. They're almost always, the principal's always 1,000. Although some are denominated in 5,000 or 10,000-hour increments. For our purposes, we will always call the face value, the par value, the principal, it will always be 1,000. So bonds are denominated in $1,000 increments. Sometimes you'll hear bond investors use the term pieces, $1,000 pieces. I don't know why, but that's what they do. Putting the coupon rate and the principal together tells you how much interest you will receive each year. For example, a coupon rate of 7%, a nominal yield, a nominal rate, they all mean the same thing, and a principal of $1,000 gives you $70 of interest. It's actually pretty simple when you think about it. If all bonds are $1,000, 7%, what are you getting every year?
$70.
Actually, you're getting $35 twice each year. But let's just think of an annual interest. And since almost all bonds are denominated in $1,000 increments, knowing the coupon rate, you know how much interest you're going to get. Therefore, normally bond investors simply refer to their bonds by the coupon rate and maturity. They'll say, I get a 7% bond, 30 years. So they're going to get $70 a year, $35 twice a year, for 30 years. Make sense?
It's, yep. Kind of like you buy a personal a set amount and you hold it for that kind of time.
Right, and then when it matures, you can roll it over or take your money back. Same idea. Same idea. That's what they are, the loans. Now, the maturity date is the date at which the bond matures. The maturity date. The date at which a bond matures and the principal must be retained, be paid. Term bonds are the most common, and they mature all at once. So a company will issue 20-year bonds that all mature in 20 years on the exact same date. So you're used to getting a loan, a mortgage, a credit card, a car loan, where every month you pay some principal and you pay some interest, right? That's what you're used to. That's what we normally do. That's not the way most bonds work. Most bonds just pay interest. They're interest-only loans. And then at the end of the term, you get your $1,000 back. That's how it works. But there are other bonds that are not as popular called serial bonds. Serial bonds have a series of maturity dates. A company may issue a series of 20-year serial bonds with 20 maturity dates. So each series within the serial bond will mature in 1, 2, or sometimes 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So in that way, they're paying off the bond as they go along. And when you buy the bond, you know, hey, it's a 20-year bond, but my bond is going to matured, is going to mature in 3 years, or 8 years, or 10, or 15. Are you with me? Understand? So in that way, it looks more like a mortgage. And there are some, although I've never seen any, this is what I was taught many years ago, there are some that redeem in a lottery that you don't actually know when you're going to be matured. They're just going to pull it, they, whatever, they do randomly, and they pull out. I've never seen that. I don't know if it actually exists, but that's what I was told. So you understand? They're mostly, bonds are mostly interest-only loans. And what happens at the end of 20 years? What happens? What do they do?
Send you a principal book.
They send you a principal book. Where do they get it?
They made investment.
They use the paper.
But where do they get? They took out $20 million or $80 million of money. What are they? Where are they going to get that money from? Well, sometimes they create what's called a sinking fund. Isn't that a great name? A sinking fund doesn't sound like something I would want. I want a rising fund. No, a sinking fund. They start putting the money away in anticipation of the bonds maturing. It's called a sinking fund.
So they put funds aside.
They put funds aside to pay it off. And some just roll it over. They just roll it over. Oh, okay, let's just roll it over. So in that way, some corporations are kind of like people. They just, oh, just get a new credit card and just roll it over. Now, bonds versus newts. This is the pinky up. Anybody in here? Yes, when you're drinking tea, you're supposed to keep your pinky up. Yeah. You know that? Didn't you know that? No. Well, that's facts. It shows you have good breeding. Mm-hmm. Yes. Doesn't work the same with Starbucks tea. It's got a straw, right? Oh, a straw! Oh my! Oh, how gauche! Yeah. Well, folks, technically there is a difference between a bond and a newt. Notes mature in 10 to 20 years, right? Bonds mature in more than 10 years, 10 or more years. So when I said that the 10-year Treasury bond was paying 1.75%, somebody who always keeps their pinky up when they're drinking tea would say, oh, no, Mr. Payano, you're obviously wrong. It's the 10-year Treasury note. And you know what I say to those people?
To you.
To you. Yeah, yeah. See, bonds usually mature, think of them as mortgage, 20, 30, 40 years. Some never mature. Those are called perpetuities, which I love. I love that name, perpetuity, because you get to spit on your friend. I just bought a perpetuity, a bond that never matures. In practice, most investors, including myself, will never worry about the distinction between a bond and a note. I just won't do it. I won't say the 2-year Treasury note. I might if I catch myself, or the 10-year Treasury note. I'll just say the 10-year Treasury bond. So it's up to you whether you want to be a stickler and always use notes for anything 10 years or less. And you want to be a stickler? Yes.
Why would you want to find that note?
You're interested in it. You're interested in interest. You got a ton of money, and you want it to be someplace safe, and you're going to live off that interest, and so you just put it in a bond and live off the interest. If you're happy with the interest, fine.
And you
can sell the bond, always. But remember, if interest rates go down, what's your bond going to do? It's going to go up. If interest rates go up, what's the value of your bond going to do? It's going to go down. And you're accepting that risk when you buy a bond. Well, it doesn't have to be high yield. Doesn't have to be. Some of them are low. Some of the railroad bonds from the early 1900s, they were paying 2.5%. But during the Great Depression, that was a lot of interest. That was a good amount. And before that, in the Depression of 1907 or something like that, there was a market, I can't remember, but there was a really bad, this was before the Federal Reserve Bank. The we tend to worry about booms and busts, think that we're you know, in the modern world, victims of that. But before that, it was even worse. Before the Federal Reserve Bank, people would just, it was a story of J.P. Morgan. It was 1907, right, Frank? I don't remember. But it was a story of him just gathering up a whole bunch of bankers, staying up all night, and saying, okay, he was sitting there playing solitaire, supposedly. J.P. Morgan, you've heard of J.P. Morgan Chase?
Yeah.
He's sitting there playing solitaire while the other guys are all figuring which banks are going to disappear, which banks are going to stick around. And the Federal Reserve had nothing to do with it because it didn't even exist yet. It was just a bunch of bankers saying, okay, who do we let live? Who do we let die? Yeah, right. Hey, exactly. You're fired. You're gone. You're out. Okay, now, let's talk about the call provision. Because this is something that we always have to think about when we're a bond investor, because we take on the role of the mortgage company, the credit card company. This is the provision that specifies whether or not and under what the circumstances the issuer can retire, prepay the bond prior to the maturity date. If interest rates drop, just as a homeowner would want to refinance their mortgage, a bond issuer would want to refinance their bond loans. Right. If you're paying 7-8% now on your home loan, you need to refinance. So if they're paying 6-8% now, a company would want to say, hey, I can get 4%, 3.5%, 4%. I'm going to refinance. So the issuer calls in the bonds. Come here, bonds! And the bonds are called away from you. You don't have a choice. They pay you your money back and you're done. It's called prepayment of bonds. All their factors equal, what would you rather have? Non-callable or callable bonds?
Non-callable.
You'd rather have non-callable, especially if they're paying a good interest rate, because they can't pull them away from you. You're going to get your interest. There are three types of call provisions. There is freely callable, which is not too common. There is non-callable, which is common in the treasury world because they're always non-callable. And there are others. And then there's deferred call. Which means, all right, we won't call them for 10 years or 5 or 10 years. After that call protection period, after that call deferment period, then we can call them. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at an example. Why don't we do it right now? How are we doing? Most corporate and municipal bonds are freely callable or have a deferred call period. And treasuries are always non-callable. So which is the least desirable?
Freely
callable. What's the most desirable?
Non-callable.
Is non-callable and in between. So why don't we just take a look right now at an example. And where are we? Chapter 9. And here's a muni bond quote. Let's take a look at... there you go. That's a good one. We'll come back to this. But here it says callable starting at September 1st, 2015. You see? So until that date, the city of Capistrano, well, it's actually a unified school district, the Capistrano, California Unified School District cannot call these bonds back until September 1st, 2015. And when they do call them back, they will pay $1,000. Now, here's the trick. You have to add a zero at the end of all these numbers. You have to add a zero at the end. We'll discuss that in a bit. Now, the eighth font, now this is February 2009 from the Useless Tribune. Have you ever read the Useless Tribune? These bonds were started to be callable at September 1st, 2009. So, when this ad was put in the paper, these bonds weren't callable yet. But at the end, but within 6 months, because this was February, by September, they would be callable. But see, they're callable at 103, at a zero. You have to pay, or not you, they, the school district, Poway School District, to call these bonds in, would have to pay $1,030. Does that make sense?
So they have the option to call them in.
They have the option starting September 1st, 2009. Before that, they can't call them. But once December 1st, 2009 rolled by, they could call the bonds away from the investors, but they have to pay a premium. They have to pay
$30. What if they don't call them?
They don't have to call them in. You don't have to refinance your mortgage. You can continue to pay your mortgage, and the mortgage company will say no problem until it finally is over with. And the same thing is true here. These bonds don't mature until 2036. You see, so in 2036 you get your $1,000 back. And in this case, these bonds mature in 2039. Make sense? Yes?
In other words, you would actually get, you would find your interest monthly.
Every 6 months.
Every 6 months.
You're getting interest every six months.
And if they call it back, then you're just...
You get your money back. You get your $1,000 back. And you made whatever interest you got. And in this case, they're going to give you, if they call the bond in, they're going to give you $1,000. Over here, they're going to give you $1,030. Because that's the call premium. Are you with me? Understand? We'll take a look at some of the other features in a bit. I don't want to confuse you with too much there. But this is real quick. Look at the minimum.
So if they called yours in, in September, you only have the first 6 months worth of...
That's right. You would just get the first 6 months of interest.
Plus your $25,000 back, plus $1,030.
Right. Plus an extra $30 per bond.
$30
per bond. So every bond is worth $1,000. And so you're going to get $30 per bond. So an extra, whatever. Well, at the time it was, when people were tight. We'll take a look at what happened. But notice the minimum. I want to make sure you notice the minimum. Who are they going after? You and me? Are they going after you and me?
Yeah,
the little people? Pinky up. Yeah, people with the pinky up. The Downton Abbey crowd. Yeah. You seen that Downton Abbey on PBS? The rich people, the very rich people. Yeah, they're going after... It was at the time, but people were frightened, as we'll see. Okay, now, here, this is what we just took a look at. The call premium. This is the amount that is added to a bond's par value and paid to investors when a bond is retired prematurely. In the case we saw with the Poway bond, there was a $30 premium. In this case, example, there's an $85 premium. So you can think of it like the prepayment penalty on a home mortgage. Some mortgages come with what's called a prepayment penalty. Don't get it, by the way. Don't let a mortgage broker sell you a loan with a prepayment penalty. It usually means they don't like you. So this bond issuer has an $85 premium. So you'll see callable at 108.5. The price then would have to be raised by the premium, and that would be the call price. The price the issuer must pay to retire the bond. It's equal to the par value, the $1,000 plus the call premium. If there is no call premium, the bond is said to be callable at par, which is just a fancy term for the $1,000, callable at par. So the Capistrano bonds were callable at par. The Unified School District of Capistrano could give you $1,000 for each of your bonds, and you would get in the, you would that would be it. You'd have to give the bond back to them, basically. Make sense? Make sense, Nadrantis? Are bonds boring?
Yeah,
bonds are pretty boring. But you think it's interesting? Hey, folks, what can I say? Bond investors are usually very wealthy. So if you're a bond broker, you're usually dealing with fairly wealthy clients, and that's the way to get rich if you want to be a broker. That's the way to get rich, is to find people who have millions of dollars and then just ream them. Yeah. And I did that. Did I say, you've heard of Bohica, haven't you? Bohica. Maybe some of you haven't heard that one in our class, in this class.
And over here has come. Again.
Right. Bend, that's a, I got it. It took me a while. Bend over, here it comes again. Right, and I just saw an example of that yesterday, and I just shake my head and just go, oh, geez. Just saw an example of somebody being bent so he could, to the tune of, yeah. All right, now, here comes the tricky part about bonds. Do you have a premium bond? Or do you have a discount bond? Or is your bond selling at par? A premium bond is a bond with a market value greater than the par value, and this occurs when interest rates go down, the bond price goes up. The discount bond occurs when the interest rates go up, and the bond price goes down. It would be selling for less than the par value. Now, it also occurs when and if the investment community believes that the bond issuer is in danger of defaulting on interest payments or principal payments. So this happens when people are worried about the bond going, the company or municipality going bankrupt. People will start to sell the bond, and that will drive the price down, supply and demand, because they're afraid that they're not going to get their interest payments, and they're not going to get their principal back. You understand? So when that happens, they become non-investment grade junk bonds, high yield bonds. And if there's no premium, nor there is a discount, the bond is said to be selling at par. Now, this is where the confusion sets in. And I think we've discussed it a little bit. Let's discuss it again. Why would a bond sell at a premium or a discount to its par value? The loan is $1,000. When you bought the bond, you paid $1,000. When the bond is redeemed, you're going to get $1,000. Why would the bond's price go up and down? It's actually very simple. The interest rate doesn't change. Remember, bonds are fixed. So the price changes. The price is not fixed. The price of the bond, if you sell it before it matures, can go up and down, and does go up and down to reflect what is going on with interest rates within the financial industry. So you remember the image of the seesaw?
Yes.
If interest rates go down, we're going to find that our bond is worth more. It's not, there's not some law that says it has to happen. It's not in the bond indenture. It just happens by the very fact that people are buying and selling these things all the time. So greed and fear. Remember fear, yes.
So let's say someone buys a bond that's really high price, $1,600 or $1,400,
which they're out there. They're out there right now.
And the company calls it back.
You're screwed. You got it. You're screwed. Especially if it's callable at par or callable at 1,030.
Yeah, so there's people that make that mistake.
Oh, well, sure. It happens.
Bohican.
You got Bohican, right. The Stockton, no. That's going to be selling at a discount because people are now frightened. But there's risk involved, isn't there? If you believe they're going to come back, because the judge could say, these bonds are now, that you're going to get this much, 60%, not 100%. You're not going to get your $1,000, you're going to get $60, $600. You understand? That could happen.
Wow. What's the history on that?
It normally very rarely happens. In the case of municipalities, it almost never happens.
Did Anaheim actually go into
city? Yes. In 1994, Orange County. The county. The Orange County went into bankruptcy. But every single bondholder got every dime back. It was a big scare, and the bond prices fell, and if you were, you had enough courage to buy those bonds at that low price, you did all right. But it was a real danger. Now, that was a specific interest. That was a specific incident that happened. It had nothing to do with the Orange County itself going into economic trouble. It had to do with some really stupid things that the finance people at the county did. They did some really stupid things. And who helped them do it? their friend at Merrill Stinch. Lynch. Sorry, Merrill Lynch. Yeah. Okay. So here's an example. This is what happens, folks. You buy a bond, a $1,000 bond, and it's paying 10%. Now, this is 1980s, right? You don't see any bonds, 10% now. And what happens? What happens? You're getting paid $100 every year. Well, actually, $50 twice a year, right?
Right.
Now, what happens if interest rates fall to 8%?
Next year, right?
What? It doesn't matter. Yeah, let's say next year. Next year. Well, wait a minute. No. You're always going to get your 10% because the bond is fixed. When you bought the bond, they made it a trust indenture. They wrote an agreement that said you're going to get $100 every year for 20 years or 30 years until the bond matures. But if interest rates fall to 8%, new bonds are only paying $80 on $1,000. You understand? A new bond coming out at $1,000 is only going to pay $80. So now investors have to pay $1,250 to get the same amount of interest. You are at an advantage. Would you sell your 10% bond for $1,000 right now?
No.
You'd say, I'll hold on to it. I'll keep my 10% a year. If you want to buy my bond, I am going to charge you a premium. I am going to charge you a premium. Now, will the premium be $1,250?
No.
Probably not. Because at the end of the 10 or 20 years, what are they going to get back? They're only going to get back $1,000 when the bond is redeemed. Are you with me? You understand? Mm. Pretty cool, huh? This is how it works in the real world. It actually works, believe it or not.
Wait, why $1,000?
That was the original agreement. The original agreement is this bond is worth $1,000 and we're going to pay you $100 a year for the next 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. But interest rates in the investment community, in the surrounding investment community, the bond is fixed. The bond will always pay
10%. But they're borrowing your interest rate, which is $1,000.
If they want to refinance, they'll give you your $1,000 back if they can. If it's callable, they might have to pay $1,030, as the Poway bonds would have to do. But, or they could just keep paying the 10%. I mean, that was part of the deal. You with me? So your bond is now selling at a premium. If you sold it, do you have to sell it?
No.
No, you don't have to sell it. The next example is the other way. We have a bond that's paying us 10%, and we're getting $100 every year. Now, what happens if interest rates the next year or whenever rise to 12%? New bonds are paying investors $120 a year. Now investors only have to pay $833 to get the same amount of interest, the $100 that you're getting paid. They don't have to pay $833. Now, there's no bond for $833, but if they paid a $1,000 bond, they're going to get $120. So is anybody going to buy your bond for $1,000?
No.
Getting $100 when new bonds are paying $120? No. You're going to, if you wanted to. You don't have to. You're not under any obligation to do this. But if you wanted to sell your bond, you're going to have to discount that bond. Your bond would be selling at a discount. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the reason for the seesaw. Interest rates go down, the bond price is going to go up because new bonds are paying less than your bond. Interest rates go up. Did I say that right? Interest rates go down, bond prices go up. It's confusing. Interest rates go up. Nobody's going to pay you the $1,000 for your bond because they can get new bonds paying more interest. Make sense? I hope so. The amount of the premium or discount is not only related to the amount or of the fall or rise of interest rates. In general, the greater the fall or rise in interest rates, the greater the premium or discount. So if interest rates were to skyrocket, your price would go down quite a bit. If interest rates were to plummet, your premium would go up. It's also related to the maturity date. And here's where the seesaw becomes really a good analogy. Remember playing on the seesaw? Some of you still do, hopefully. And when you were wanting to be really excited, you'd be all the way out on the one side of the seesaw. And then you go up and down a whole bunch, right, with your friend. And then when you were down, you jump off and you fall off.
And they put seats on them now.
What?
I think they have seats on them now.
They have seats on them now? Whatever. But what happens if you jump in the middle?
The way it moves.
Did you jump in the middle ever?
Yeah.
While your friends were playing on the other side?
Yeah.
And did you're in the middle. Do you go up and down a whole bunch?
Not really.
No, you just go up and down just a little bit. If you stand right in the center, you barely move. And that's the same thing that happens with maturity dates. The closer you are to the maturity date, the less you go up and down. The farther you go out, the more you go up and down. And maybe now you'll remember when we were talking about long-term, short-term, and intermediate-term bonds. Short-term bonds are far less risky than long-term bonds. Why? Because there's less time for interest rates to move against them. If you have a long-term bond and interest rates go high, your bond is going to plummet. But if you have a long-term bond and interest rates go low, your bond is going to skyrocket.
Those who had bonds in 2006?
People, well, what happened is if you hung on, you were okay. But in the turmoil, government bonds, treasury bonds, became like gold. People dumped everything else. Stocks imploded. Bonds went down, not treasury bonds, but corporate bonds, muni bonds, fell like a stone, as we're going to see. We're going to see this, some examples. And so maybe today, maybe not. We have a few more minutes. But if they held on, they came back when people realized that the world is not going to end. Okay, make sense? Okay, good. All right, so how are we doing? So here's I don't think it's a great graphic, but it's the idea. And it's from your book. As you get closer and closer to the maturity date, the premium and the discount is going to lessen, lessen, and lessen. Because when you mature, when the bond matures, what are you going to get back? Everyone should say 1,000. Wait till I ask you. When the bond matures, what are you going to get back? $1,000. So if there's a whole lot of time left, and interest rates fall, your premium is going to go way high. If there's a whole lot of time left, and interest rates skyrocket, your discount is going to go way low. And that's how it works. And so, if you're good at predicting where interest rates go, you can play this game where you're buying bonds for the potential capital gains. Now, there are people who are paid tremendous sums of money to incorrectly predict where interest rates are going to go. Do you think anybody can really do it? It's incorrect. You've paid tremendous sums of money to do it wrong. Wouldn't that be a great job?
Right now.
You can do it right now. But you gotta go to Wharton School of Business or Harvard or Stanford, and you gotta look for parts. Come on, you gotta get my suit on.
What?
Credibility. And then you too can incorrectly predict where interest rates are going and still get paid $500,000 plus bonuses. Doesn't that sound like a great job?
Yeah.
If you could correctly predict them, would you tell anybody?
Hell no.
In general, long-term bonds... How are we doing for time? Okay, here we are. We're ready. We're done. Oh, good. Long-term bonds exhibit greater price volatility and a greater opportunity for capital gain or losses. Intermediate-term and short-term bonds exhibit lesser price volatility and a lesser opportunity for capital gain or loss. Bonds very close to maturity start to look like corporate paper, start to look like treasury bills. They start to look like money market accounts. Do you understand? Because they have 4 months until you get your $1,000 back. And so if you, but having said all that, make sure you understand this. Make sure you understand the seesaw. But if you intend to keep your bond until it matures, do you care?
No.
No, it's that simple. If you intend to keep your bonds until they mature, then you are not concerned about price volatility. You will always receive the par value of the bond, except in the very rare case of a bond default. And going back to 1960, this is the yield on the 10-year Treasury. We see that the yield on, and this is the yield on the S&P 500, and this is from Chapter 5, by the way. This should look familiar. We see that the stock yield was almost 4%. The bond yield was a little 4.5%. And then throughout the 70s, they diverged quite a bit. What happened in the 1970s? Inflation. And inflation is the bondholder's nemesis, bondholder's nightmare. So bond investors kept saying, I want more interest, I want more interest. Until 1981, when the 10-year Treasury hit almost 15%, the prime rate went to 22% for just a few weeks. Mortgage rates, you aren't alive, most of you, mortgage rates hit 17% for just a couple of months. And then ever since the 1980s, interest rates have been coming down, and then in the 80s and 90s, dividend rates were coming down until they hit a low of 2000. That's the height of the stock market bubble. And then throughout the 2000s, interest rates have been falling, whereas dividend rates were about 2 or something. And then there's 2008. What happened is people were so frightened. They dumped stocks, they dumped most bonds, they bought treasuries and lowered the interest rate to the point where stocks were paying more than 10-year treasury note. And was that a good time to buy stocks?
Yeah, definitely.
It's happened again. The 10-year treasury note has gone below what stocks are paying in dividends. Is it a good time to buy stocks?
Yes.
Well, we'll see in 3 years. Okay? We'll see. I think so. I wouldn't touch bonds now with a 10-foot pole. When, what do you think? Bonds, not as boring as I make them out to be, right?
Yes.
Study, study, study. See you on Thursday when we will continue with bonds. Yes.